Parsha Balak begins, of course, with Balak's reaction to the events, the end of last week's Parsha, Chukas, where the Amori, Sichon, and Og started up with Bnei Yisrael and learned a very expensive lesson. Balak sees all of this, Vayar Balak ben Sipor, is Kolasha Asa Yisrael Amori, and his feeling is, we're next. And so they get in touch with Midian, and then they send a delegation to Bilam, and the rest is the rest of Parshas Balak. It's worthwhile for us to pay very close attention to the psukim in the beginning of the Parsha. As we'll see, there seems to be a lot of shifting of terminology, the various ways that the Jewish people are referred to. And let us watch closely. Pasuk Beis, which we read, Vayar Balak ben Sipor, is Kol Asher Asa Yisrael Lo Emori. So Balak sees everything that Yisrael did to the Emori. Okay, we know who Yisrael are. Pasuk Gimel, Vayaga Moav, Mipnei Ha'am Ma'od, Kiravu. Moab is afraid. Of whom? Of the Am. Who's the Am? Am Yisrael. Why are they called the Am? We don't know. One pasuk ago, they are Yisrael. And now they're referred to as the Am. Okay. Except, the pasuk continues. Vayakatz Moab, Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. So they're afraid of Bnei Yisrael. They're reviled. Is this the same Am that they're afraid of? They fear the Am, and they revile Yisrael. It's all one and the same people. That's the first question. And we're just two psukim in. Another interesting question. What exactly are they afraid of? What is it about the Jewish people that makes them so scared? Well, Pasuk Gimel says, Vayogo Moav, Moav is afraid, Mipnei Ha'am Ma'od, Ki Ravhu. For they are Rav. What does Rav mean? Many. Their numbers is what strikes fear in the heart of Moav. Well, later on, in Pasuk Vav, Va'ata, this is when the message goes to Bilam, Lechana Arali Es Ha'am Hazeh, again, this nation, Ki Atzum Hu Mimeni, because it is more Atzum than I am. What is Atzum? Otzma, strength, strong. So it's interesting. In the beginning, Pasuk Gimel, the fear is because Ravhu. Presently, the fear becomes Ki Otsumhu Mimeni. What is the difference between those two sources of fear? Is it because of the numbers or because of the power? Furthermore, let's see Moab's, in Pasuk Dalad, Moab's worries. Vayomer Moab al-Zikne Midian. Ato, Yilachachu ha-Kahal es kol saviv oseinu. This Kahal, interestingly, we've shifted from Yisrael to the Am, and now the Kahal. This Kahal, they will uproot as kol sevir oseinu, all of our environs, kilcho chashor es yerek hasodeh. Like the ox uproots the greenery of the field. That's a very interesting way of describing your fears. If we would paraphrase, or if we would summarize, we would say that Moab are afraid that they're going to be overrun by Bnei Yisrael. It doesn't seem to be an appropriate time for poetry. Like the ox of the field, they shall uproot our surroundings. And if it's not like the ox of the field, sound the alarm. Israel is coming. Interestingly, though, they don't seem to express fear that they will be overrun. But they say, actually, they say, Yilachechu akolas kol sivim oseinu, they will uproot all of our surroundings. It sounds like they feel that they'll be okay. They just have rachmanus on their surroundings. So are they secure or are they afraid? Now, there is a background here. It happens to be that Bnei Yisrael have been warned off waging war with Moab. We find that later on, the Pasuk records it in Sefer Devarim. Hashem says, Al tiskar bam milchama, do not go to war against Moab. Moab have a certain protective merit, and they're from Lot, and they're... So they're actually off limits for war. The interesting question is, does Moab know this? And Moab has not reached Sefer Devarim. In fact, neither have we. But do they somehow know that they are not to be a target for war? Perhaps they do. For the same is true of Edom. Edom is also somehow has merit. And they know that we did not wage war with Edom. In last week's parsha, if we follow the events, we sent a delegation to Edom asking to go through. They said no, and we backed away. They even came out with a show of arms. We backed away. We're not going to war with them. Moab has got much more in common with Edom than it does with Sichon and the Amori. And that's why it seems that they're not afraid for their existence, for their survival. They know, apparently, that they feel they'll be okay. They won't be the targets of war. Then why are they afraid at all? This very enigmatic-sounding, Yilachechu akahal, es kol sivim oseinu, they'll eat up the environs. Well, it could be, and this happens to be true, that even though with regards to Moab, the Pasuk says, Al tiskar bam milchama, do not wage war against them, it doesn't mean that they were not allowed to show any form of aggression towards them. They were able to cause trouble for Moab, just not full-on war. But then what does this have to do with the Amori? Let us not forget, the parsha begins by Balak seeing what happened with the Amori, and the simple subtext is, and he feels that he's next. But if they know that they're safe, then what happened to the Amori has got nothing to do with them, because they're the Amori, and they were... open for war, and you're not available for war. They're not going to attack you. So why are the actions of Moab presented as a reaction to what happened with the Amori if they know that they're different than the Amori and they won't be treated the same? Now, some Mefarshim say, and this will already begin to open up the question of Yisrael versus the Am, that, as we know, is often the case, Yisrael represents the higher levels, the Am represents the lower levels, and some of Farshim explain that Moab was still afraid, because even though the Jewish people have been given a directive not to wage war, a military campaign or aggression against Moab, they're not confident that all of the Jewish people will abide by that. It could be that Yisrael, the higher echelons, they'll keep themselves in check. They will show restraint. But there's always an Am, there's always the everyman. And who's to say that they won't get carried away? And not hard to conjecture that would certainly be the case if it was Moab, Halavai, that the higher ones would show some restraint. Once the army gets going, difficult to rein them in. That's their worry. And therefore, their fear was from the Am, the perceived everyman. But if that's the case, then why again do they have such understated expression of their fear? They'll eat up the surroundings. They should be afraid for their lives. Who knows what the Am will do? Especially if they've been reading the papers. I mean, they have everything to fear from the Am. And so, we've raised a number of questions, and they're very close reading questions. And that's the way Chumash needs to be learned. An approach to all of this, which I submit, is categorically different than anything else we may see regarding the beginning of Parshas. Balak comes from a sefer which is called Meleches Machsheves. Meleches Machsheves was written by someone called Rabbi Moshe Chafetz. I don't know much about him. The Sefer, what it says on the title page, it was published about 300 years ago when the author was at the age of 100 years old. So there's someone who did not believe in early retirement, and it's a Sefer which hasn't been reprinted, which is a chaval, of course, to us. My father-in-law actually procured for me a volume, very old, at a great expense to him, which was approved by me. And that is how I came to have the Sefer Meleches Machsheves. And Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz says as follows. The Parshanut is stunning. Moav are not afraid of Bnei Yisrael. As far as we know, they know Bnei Yisrael will not harm them. That's not their problem. They're afraid of something else. Their fear comes from a different group of people. Well, let's go back to the beginning of the parsha. Vayar Balak ben Sipor. Eis kol ashe Yisrael la'emori. Balak sees everything that Yisrael did to the Emori. Well, what did they do? Kol ashe aso Yisrael la'emori. Everything. I mean, what's everything? It's one thing. They went to war and defeated them. Everything means they actually did two things. If we go back to last week's parsha and Chukas, there was the war, and they defeated them. Vayoresh es artzom, and they occupied their land. And lehorish means to dispossess. That means that they're not comfortable living with all the Amoris, which are all the people that sent the army to try and destroy them. When they moved into that territory of Amori, they dispossessed the population. I mean, the two don't go together. Which gives us a very interesting group of people known as Amori refugees. Now the question is, where are they going to go? The simplest answer is, they'll move to the next place along. That's Moav. Moav are afraid of this group of people. Because they'll come in, and they'll basically need to be supported, and they'll eat up everything, and they're not interested in giving tzedakah to the Amori refugees. And that's why Pasuk Gimel says, Vayogor Moav mipnei ha'am. The Am, says Meleches Machsheves, is not Yisrael. The Am is this new Am that's roaming around and likes the look of the land of Moav and maybe decide to settle there. Ki Ravhu. Why they're so afraid? Because there's so many of them. The fear is this enormous group of consumers now that will plant themselves all around the land of Moav. And the pasuk continues, Vayakatz Moav mipnei bnei Yisrael. By Moav reviled bnei Yisrael for having that war with the Amori. They were attacked. Well, that's history already. But they're upset with Yisrael for winning. It's not the last time that happens. And the result is this group of people. They're afraid of them, of this Am, ki ravhu. And that's why they send this distress message, Pasuk Dalet, by Yomer Moav, El Ziknei Midian, Atah. You know what will happen now? Yilachachu HaKahal. There's this new congregation. They've assembled themselves around us. You know what they're going to do? They'll eat up all of our resources. Yilachachu HaKahal, let's call Sviroseinu. Kilcho Chashor. That's not a worry about what the Jewish people will do. That's a worry about what the Amori will do. That's their fear. Now, the question is, what's the solution if that's the problem? In theory, there are two possibilities. Number one, take them in and care for them, which actually is not even considered as an option as far as Moab is concerned. So the only other option is to get the Bnei Yisrael out of the land of Amori, which will allow the Amoris who have been displaced to go back in. Except, that's not so easily done, because the Bnei Yisrael are very strong, as evidenced by their war with the Amori. And that is why Balak sends for Bilam, to weaken Bnei Yisrael, so that he can get them out and put the Amori back in, so the Amori won't be camping around the land of Moab, consuming hard-earned Moab resources. That's why in Pasuk Vav, when Balak is talking to Bilam, "Vata lechana orali es am hazeh," I need you to curse this nation for me. And this am hazeh now, of course, is Bnei Yisrael, as he began in Pasuk Hey, "Hine am yatsami Mitzrayim." Why do I want you to curse him? "Ki atsum humimeni," because they're too strong for me. We originally posed this as a contradiction. Originally it said that they were afraid from the am ki rabhu. And then it says that he's afraid ki atsum hu mimeni. No, Moab was afraid of the Amoris because they were rav. There's so many of them. What are we going to do with them? Here, Balak is voicing his fears over Bnei Yisrael, and that fear is ki atsum hu mimeni. And that's why, if you curse them, ulai uchal nakebo va'agarshenu min ha'aretz. You see how everything is falling into place. Maybe I can weaken them, va'agarshenu min ha'aretz, and evict them from the land. We normally understand that Balak just wants to stop Bnei Yisrael coming into his land. But that's not called evicting them from a land. It's just stopping them coming in, not throwing them out. But when we appreciate that he is referring to the land that they've occupied, which is Amori land, that's the land he wants to be megarish them from, in order to allow the Amoris back in. Ulai uchal nakebo ba'agarshenu min ha'aretz. So far, it's an entirely new vision. And Meleches Marsheves keeps going. You see, this will explain to us something else. Who was it that was so alarmed about the activities of Bnei Yisrael? Who was it that got in touch with Midian? Let's watch again very carefully. The opening pasuk, Vayar Balak ben Sipor. Balak sees everything that happened, everything shouted to the Amori, and he's in charge. But we don't hear from him in the next pasuk. Vayagar Moab mipnei ha. Moab is afraid. Vayakas Moab mipnei Bnei Yisrael. Moab detests Bnei Yisrael. And moreover, it's Moab that gets in touch with Midian, not Balak. That's the next pasuk Dalet. Vayome Moab el ziknei Midian. This is what's going to happen. It isn't until, actually, it was more of a grassroots type of movement, whereby Moab somehow, that committee was, they got in charge. Balak isn't consulted. He only gets in on it when it's too late to stop it. And then he has this idea of Bilam, which is in Pasuk Hey. But why wouldn't Balak get in touch with Midian? Is he not looking out for his nation's interests? Why does he have to wait till Moab and the cart's moon already, and then he jumps on before it's too late? I mean, a leader can't have his people running away from him. Well, the answer goes back to the beginning of the parsha, which reads, "Vayar Balak ben Sipor is kol asher asar Yisrael lo emori." Translated literally, Balak ben Sipor saw everything Yisrael did to the Amori. Now, the question is, did he saw it? He was there? I mean, if he's the king of Moab, I'm sure he heard plenty about it, but he saw it with his own eyes? Would it not say, Vayishma Balak ben Sipor? He heard? Wouldn't that be more appropriate? So the Moshev Zakenim, which is one of the collections from the Rishonim of the Balei HaTosfos, explains, yes, he saw it, because the Medrash tells us that Balak was not a natural born Moavi. Balak was originally part of Sichon's army. He was a general of Sichon. He saw what Yisrael did to the Amori, because he was there when Yisrael did it to the Amori. And in fact, this is why Moab appointed Balak as their leader at that time. Interestingly, we're only told that he is the king of Moab at the end of Pasuk Dalet. That's very disorderly in terms of how people are normally presented. The first time we hear them, let's have their credentials. We hear Balak referred to in the very opening of the parsha, Bayar Balak ben Sipor. Why would the Pasuk not tell us straight away, Bayar Balak ben Sipor, Melech Moab? Tell us from the beginning. Don't leave us in suspense for an entire two psukim till we find out who he is. Except the Mefarshim say no. He wasn't king at that time. When the Pasuk says Vaya, when the Pasuk says he saw what Yisrael did, that's before he began his career as the king of Moab. That's when he was yet a general in Sichon's army. It's only as part of their alarm at what the Bnei Yisrael might do, they appointed him as their king, which means at the end of Pasuk Dalet, when it says, Ubalak ben Sipor melech lemoav ba'isei, Balak was the king at that time, it means he became appointed the king at that time. And now he's in charge, he's got to do something. Because they felt they needed his expertise. They were worried. But now we have a fascinating insight as to why it wasn't Balak that would sound the alarm. Because what are they alarmed about? You have this group of people called the Amori, and Moab says, these foreigners, they're going to come and ruin the neighborhood. And they're going to come and take all our resources, and that's unacceptable to Moab. But it's not unacceptable to Balak, because Balak is an Amori. Which means he would actually be okay with Moab sharing its resources with the Amori. They're his people. Therefore, it's only when Moab, who's not prepared to share anything with the Amori, so they begin the whole process of sounding alarm. They get in contact with Midian. At that point, Balak chooses the path not of helping the Amori, who are actually his people, but rather weakening Yisrael, who are the common enemy between him and Moab. So there are so many questions that are addressed by this amazing approach of the Melech Es Machsheves. It's a very great chiddush, classic parshan. So the balance of the parsha, Bilam makes his way to Moab, tries to curse Bnei Yisrael. Nothing happens, or nothing good happens, only more correctly, nothing good for Bilam happens, everything good for Bnei Yisrael happens, at least for that time. And I'd like to move, actually, at this point, to the final communication between Bilam and Balak, which is in Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Yud Dalet. As we know, he tried to curse Bnei Yisrael three times, he ended up having to bless them three times. At this point, enough is enough, as they say, and he's about to go. In Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Yud Dalet. But before he leaves, he has another message for Balak. Va'ata, hineni holech la'ami. Now, I'm going. Lecha yotzecha. I'll give you advice, counsel. What this nation will do to your nation in the end of days. So it very explicitly moves very much into the future, what's being discussed now. Although the earlier brachas could be shared, or perhaps even primarily about the present, this is about the Acharis Hayamim. What exactly is Bilam saying to Balak? So let us see Rashi. On the words, Lecha Yotzecha, I will give you counsel. What's the Eitzah? Rashi explains, Ma Lecha La'asos, I'll tell you what to do. Umahi Ha'Eitzah, and what is the advice? Elokehem Shel Elu Sone Zimohi. The God of this nation hates immorality, physical immorality. Kedeisa Bechelek, as the Gemara describes at length in Chelek, in the final Perek of Sanhedrin. In other words, what Bilam here is doing, this is his parting gift to Balak, is giving him the advice to cause the Bnei Yisrael to stumble in matters of physical immorality, which becomes the final section of Parshas Balak, the Benos Midian and Benos Moab, and the whole situation there. That was the Eitzah of Bilam. Lecha Yotzecha, I'm going to give you a piece of advice. Next, says Rashi, Asheya seha mazel amcha. Rashi explains Mikra Kotzer huzeh. This is a pasuk which is abridged, because Bilam is really saying two things. Number one, Iyatzcha lahachshilam. I'll give you a piece of advice how to make them stumble. And secondly, just for your information, I will tell you, I will tell you that which they will do to Moab in the end of days. Well, Rashi has divided Bilaam's words into two. They're really two statements, two sentences almost. Why would Rashi not explain that this is all one thing? Well, as Mefarshim explained very simply, one can't say that it's all about Achrus Hayamim because Bilaam says, Lecha Iyatzacha, I'm going to give you advice. But what's going to happen at Achrus Hayamim is not advice, that's information. So the Eitzah has to be something else. But it can't all be about this Eitzah, on the other hand, of what to do with, to get those the Midianite girls and Moabite girls to cause them to stumble. Because his words are what this nation will do to you, Ba'achrus Hayamim. This isn't happening Ba'achrus Hayamim, B'nos Moab, and it's also not something that B'nai Yisrael did to Moab. It's what Moab did to B'nai Yisrael. And therefore, Rashi sees, apparently, no clearer way than to understand this is a Mikra Kotzer, and there are two things going on. Two very different things, actually. Number one, eights are for now, to damage them. And number two, what they will do to you in the future. Which, interestingly, actually lets Balak know that the Jewish people will be still around in the future, and they will yet be the undoing of Moab. So he seems to be as good as telling him that whatever you might do to them, and I wish you the best, or the worst, it's not going to destroy them. Because I'm now also telling you that they, in the Achrus Hayamim, and they will be your undoing. Interestingly, there are Mefarshim, Parshanim of Rishonim, who do explain that Bilaam's words are all one thing. It's all one run. L'cha iyotza, ashayase, ha'amazel achrus hayom. The Rivosh of the Rishonim and the Tzror Hamor, two of the later Rishonim, actually explain in the same way. Bilaam gives Balak a piece of advice as his parting gift. And what's the advice? Say these Rishonim. Stop. Leave them alone. The reason why you're taking such drastic action against them is because you think that they're about to destroy you. So let me help you by telling you that whatever they will do to you is not going to happen now. Rather, it's going to happen Ba'achris Hayamim. In other words, this information that the real confrontation between Yisrael and Moab will happen much, much later on in history is the basis of the Eitzah of Bilaam to just leave them alone. Which is very interesting because we wonder, did Bilaam know this all along? The simple understanding is that Balak is afraid of B'nai Yisrael. Bilaam is telling him, currently, you have nothing to be afraid of. Did he know that from the beginning? It's difficult to know. He agreed to come and curse the B'nai Yisrael because he thought he would succeed and there was money involved. So that's not the time to tell Balak that your fears are unfounded. After all, if Balak is going to bankroll the whole thing, Bilaam has no objections. It's only once he's failed miserably that he now tells Balak, I hope it's not too late to mention, that really there was never a problem in the first place. That should make you feel better. I don't know if it did make Balak feel better, so then why did Bilaam come to curse B'nai Yisrael? But at any event, this is Bilaam's advice to Balak, to leave them alone. And I wonder whether we may further suggest, he says in Pasuk Yudalad, Hinenia Olech La'ami, Lecha Iyatzacha, which we translate as, I'll give you an advice. But what does the word Lecha mean? Go, I will give you advice. Where is he meant to go? The word lecha normally gets muffled a little bit in translation. And really it means I'll give you advice. But he does say lecha yatzacha. It could be based on this Rishonim that lecha is the advice. Lecha means go. Means move away. Leave off from them. Don't confront them. Lecha yatzacha. Go away. That's my eitzah. Because any trouble really between them and you won't happen now. It will happen much later on. And so we have a very interesting machlokus Rishonim as to how to understand this pasuk of whether lecha yatzacha is a self-contained advice, is it connected to Achrus Hayamim, or is that separate information? And Bilaam not only proceeds to talk about Yisrael and Moab in future generations, in Achor Sayamim, he starts to talk about everyone. I mean, this is a prediction of the world. And he talks about Amalek, and he talks about Edom, everyone. One of the groups that he talks about in Pasuk Kaf Aleph is the Cainim. But let's see the Cainim. Vayaras HaCaini, we don't yet know who they are. Vayisam Shalom Vayomar, took up his mashal. Eitan Meshavecha, your where you're settled is very strong. You're strongly entrenched. You're in a good position. Whoever you are, the Caini, Eitan Meshavecha. Well, who are the Caini? Rashi explains that the Caini are actually the descendants of Yisro. Caini is one of Yisro's seven names. And the Caini are a whole group that came out from Yisro. And they did very well for themselves. But Rashi explains to us on the words Eitan Meshavecha, you're so strongly entrenched and you're in such a good position. Rashi says, Tama'ani, I'm astounded that you will do so well for yourselves. Why? Mehechan Zachisa Lachach. How did you merit to do so well? Why not? Halo aita imi hayisa ba'atzas havonis chakmalo. I can't get over it, says Bilam. I can't understand it, says Bilam. You were originally with me as part of the council when Paro was wondering what to do about Bnei Yisrael in the beginning of Shemos, havonis chakmalo. And we were all there. And this is the famous Gemara, it's in Masechet Sota in the first parak, and Masechet Sanhedrin in Daf Kuf Vav. Shlosha Hayu Ba'osa Eitzah, there were three who were the primary figures in the council of Paro at that time. What to do about Bnei Yisrael? Havan and Sakmana. Who were they? Yisro, Bilam, and Eov, and Paro. That's quite a gathering. And each of them went a different way and got a different reward or comeuppance, the Gemara says. Yisro ran away. There was no way that he can do anything about it, but he registered his protest by running away, and he became now a fugitive from Paro. And the Gemara says, in the merit of him running away, which was quite a very brave move, he was zocher that his descendants would be members of the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. That was, and the Gemara quotes Psukim to demonstrate that was the case. So that's Yisro. He did a good thing and he got a good reward. Bilam agreed with Paro. Destroy them or do your worst to them. Nerag, and he was killed. Eov, says the Gemara, shosak. He didn't say one way or the other. He sat on the fence a little bit. Nidun be Yisurim, and therefore he got all of his famous sufferings of Eov. Even though he didn't exceed, he should have protested. As Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says, it's difficult to judge, but maybe Eov says, well, what difference does it make if I would have said something? It wouldn't have changed anything. So should I still protest? But he protested plenty about his sufferings, even though there's no way that it's going to change anything. Sometimes a person needs to protest. So this is Bilam's Eitan Moshevecha. He has a history with the Caini. Yisro, I can't believe it. We were together, and now look at you. How did it happen? A couple of questions. Firstly, the Gemara says, Yisro, he did this very brave thing. He ran away. He protested. And what was his reward? His descendants would sit on the Sanhedrin, which is a very good thing. But is that the best thing that happened to Yisro? It's possible to find something literally closer to home. His daughter married Moshe Rabbeinu. I would say that's, as these things go, that's pretty good. So it's interesting that Moshe is kind of overlooked, as the Gemara says, well, where did Yisro ever have like something good happen to him? You know, in a few hundred years' time, Moshe is the Sanhedrin. He's the whole thing and more. How come Moshe wasn't named as the reward of Yisro? It's an interesting shaila. Secondly, Bilam, really, in Rashi's words, Tama'ani, I'm in wonder. Mehechan zechisa l'kach, how? How could you merit to have such good things happen to you? Or why are you wondering, Bilam? Don't you remember? You said to try and destroy them, and Yisro ran away. You did the wrong thing, he did the right thing. So why are you wondering why good things happened to him? Good things happened because he did the right thing. And this, by the way, was approximately 120 years ago. They are now at the end of their 40th year in the Midbar. And this is before Moshe is born. Moshe is now 120 years old. That's a long time. 120 years is a long time in politics. So didn't you, Bilam, notice that you never saw Yisro again? You're so puzzled by why good things will happen to him? The Gemara actually has another account of the death of Bilam, where Rabbi Hanina, it says, was questioned by someone. How old was Bilam when he died? That was the question asked to Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina had no idea. I mean, he didn't know. Pasuk doesn't say. However, says Rabbi Hanina, I don't know, but I'm prepared to guess. If you really want to know my opinion, I'll guess. Because the Pasuk says, in Tehillim, Va'ata Elokim, Toridem Lever Shachas, Anshe Domim Umirma, Lo Yechatsu Yemehem. People of blood and deceit, they will not live out half their days. Lo Yechatsu Yemehem. Well, says Rabbi Hanina, Yemei Shenozeinu Shivim Shana, the average lifespan is 70, half of that is 35. Lo Yechatsu Yemehem, I would say around 33 or 34. And this Min, who'd questioned him, was very upset because he somehow got hold of records of the time where it stated that Bilam was 33 years old when he was killed. And he didn't like it that Rabbi Hanina got the answer right without having seen the records. Rashi already points out that this account of the death of Bilam is unavoidably at odds with the Gemara that says that Bilam was one of those three, Ba'osa Eitza, because the Eitza happened before Moshe is born, which would put him at 120 plus. At this time, he's killed in next week's Parsha, and they checked in the records, and he's killed at the age of 33. It seems to be a case of what we call Agados Chalukos, different Masoros, different traditions about this. Okay. However, there is one of the Rishonim. I haven't seen him quoted elsewhere. His name is Rav Menachem Medani, and he is quoted in the Das Zakenim Mibalei Tosos in Parshas Shemos. And he is a Chiddush. Rav Menachem Medani says, the Gemara tells us, Shlosha Hayu Ba'osa Eitza. There were three who were involved in that Eitza. Which Eitza? Gemara doesn't say. Which council? Gemara doesn't specify. Well, Rashi told us it's the Eitza of Paro, of an Ischachmalo. Says Rav Menachem Medani, it seems to me that the Eitza that the Gemara is referring to is the Eitza of Bilam in this week's Parsha, Lecha Yotzecha. Bilam says, all the how did Yisro come to be in that assembly? We don't know. But Bilam is there, Balak is there, Eob is there, Yisro is there. Bilam says, it seems to me the Eitza at this stage is to get them involved in Znus, in immorality. That was his Eitza. Yisro ran away in protest. And Eob was silent. It's a major statement. We're used to Rashi's explanation that the Osa Eitza is the time of Paro, but Rav Menachem Medani says, of the Balei HaTosfos, it seems that the Eitza actually is this Eitza. That's where Yisro protested. And therefore, says Rav Menachem, there's no contradiction between the two accounts of the death of Bilam, or the two accounts of Bilam. Because when the Gemara says that he was 33 when he died, we have no reason to suspect that he was older than 33. He was there together in Osa Eitza. Osa Eitza was a few weeks prior to that, not 120 years prior to that. And he actually uses this explanation to resolve that contradiction. We may further suggest that there may be support for this explanation, this approach in the Gemara itself. That's why the Gemara says that the reward of Yisro, his descendants were members of the Sanhedrin in Lishkas HaGozis. Our question was, I mean, nothing else happened to him? What about Moshe? Moshe married his daughter. That's not good enough reward? It's perfect reward, but it had already happened. That's not going to be a reward for something he's doing now. If his moral act of running away in protest is time-stamped at the end of the 40 years, whatever reward will have to be after the 40 years, not 40 years earlier or more. So I think that is resolved very well according to this approach. And moreover, it's easier to understand why Bilam was somewhat surprised that Yisro had such good things come to him when he says, you were with us in the same Eitzah. Our question was, well, it's 120 years ago. A lot of water under the bridge since then. But according to Rav Menachem, Alo imano Yisro ba'osa Eitzah now, meaning just recently. He doesn't know that Yisro's disappeared, and as far as he's concerned, they're on the same page. That's why he's so surprised. So that's a very interesting approach to be aware of from the Rishonim, Rav Menachem Medani's understanding of Shlosha Hayu Ba'osa Eitzah. However, back to Rashi. Rashi says that Bilam, when the Gemara says they were together Ba'osa Eitzah, it's a reference to the time in Mitzrayim. And the Gemara records a very interesting exchange between Bilam, as we know, when he finally gets permission to go. So he goes on his donkey, Bilam's famous donkey. And the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Kuf Hei Amud Beis that the people of Midian, who were, stayed with him, or Moab more correctly, stayed with him, they were a bit surprised that he's riding on a donkey. They were riding on steeds and stallions. And he's on a donkey. It's a bit of a Nebuch situation. In fact, we should know, and this is quite a chiddush, the Rishonim all ask that in the beginning, as much as Hashem did not initially grant Bilam permission, but in the end he did. And if he can go, he can go. He gets up and he goes, and Hashem is angry with him. Vayicha afalekim ki holechu. So all Mefarshim ask, if you allowed him to go, so then you can't be angry at him for going. And there are many, many explanations to understand what exactly Hashem was angry about. But a fascinating explanation is to be found in the commentary of Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin, who is known as more as the author of the Trumas Hadeshen, the famous halachic Trumas Hadeshen. He has a short commentary on Rashi's Perush, which is called Biurei Maharai. And he says something unbelievable. Afagav she'itir lo kvar, even though Hashem has allowed him to go, why is he angry that he goes? The Trumas Hadeshen pays attention to one word that we'd let it go. And that is, Hashem says, kum lechita. If you really want to go, kum lechita. Which we translate means, you can go. Where did Hashem tell him to go? Lech. What else did he say? Kum. Arise. How's Bilam meant to arise and go with them? What does that mean? Yeshli yashiv al derech hapshat. Lefisha omar lo, Hashem said to him, kum lechitam. Rise up and go with them. Rotze lomar, bekoma zekufa. Go proud. If you have permission from me to go, you're representing me as you go. Make sure you ride proud. Al sus. Get a horse. Ride like a mensch. Shelo ye zilusa klape maala. That there shouldn't be a zilzil, shouldn't be degrading. Shetishrish kinasu al ashfalim, that Hashem should make us on a lowly donkey rider. And he went on a donkey. That's not the way you go representing Hashem. That's true for Bilam. I think it's true for everybody. So that's the Truma Sedeshans. He didn't say you can go. He says, kum lechitam. Bilam didn't kum, he just went. The Gemara actually records a conversation between the Sari Moab and Bilam. They asked him, what's that, a donkey? Why don't you ride on a horse? You don't have a horse? Amar lehu, he said, Biritiva shadoi. I left it in the field. Okay. That's doesn't seem to be a very overpowering answer. I've left it in the field, so maybe he'd like to go back and get it. They'll probably make better time if he goes back for the horse than if they'll wait for him to schlep along with a donkey. So how is this the answer, Biritiva shadoi? So a very interesting explanation. You see, to say, I left it in the field, that's it. Pardon the expression with reference to Bilam, it's a bit lame as an answer. So there is a sefer called Yalkut HaUrim, and he explains. Let's go back to Parshas Va'era, 10 plagues. Disaster is striking Mitzrayim. One of the plagues is Barad. And there, Barad hail, they were given a warning. Amazing consideration. Go, tell the people to bring all their animals inside, because if they're left outside, they'll be struck with the hail. If they're inside, they'll be safe. Well, the Pasuk says, Hayareis devar Hashem me avde paro. Those of Paro's servants who were God-fearing, Hainesis and Miknes, that he brought them all in. But Vasher lo somli boel Dvar Hashem, but it's someone who didn't care to pay attention to Dvar Hashem. He left it outside. Now, the Pasuk says, Hayare es Dvar Hashem me avde paro. The God-fearing among avde paro. Was anyone God-fearing among avde paro? It seems to refer to the close circle of paro's servants. In fact, some of Farshim wonder whether they even let the word out to everyone else. They perhaps were not interested in giving such credibility to Moshe, to issue such a warning, to let them know how considerate Moshe had been to warn them in advance. They prefer to have everyone have their animals destroyed, that no one should know that Moshe actually allowed, gave them advanced warning. And again, that's a precedent for later times. But the Avdei Paro knew about it. So the Medrash Rabbah actually puts names to faces. It identifies who was of Avdei Paro. That's the Yareh Dvar Hashem. Who was of Avdei Paro that paid no attention? It says the Medrash Hayareh Dvar Hashem Avdei Paro Ze'iov. Yisrael had run away, but the two primary counselors of Paro were still there, Iov and Bilam. Iov was the Yareh Dvar Hashem. He heard. He took his animals in. Vasher lo sam libo. And then who was the one who paid no attention, says the Medrash? That's Bilam. So where are his horses? Left in the field. That's the end of them. So the Yalkut HaUrim, they said to him, no horses? Biritiva shadai. I left them in the field. I didn't pay attention at the time. Why does he get no new horses? Perhaps he's been traumatized by that original experience. But that's his explanation of Biritiva shadai. I left them in the field and they were finished off by the hail. I'm left with a donkey. What are you going to do? In a sense, this depiction, Asher lo sam libo al devar Hashem, just didn't give it heart. Lo sam lev, we say in Hebrew, didn't pay attention, didn't give consideration. That's what characterizes Bilam more than anything else. Really, to look at Bilam over the course of this parsha is to see someone systematically avoid and shut out any message that is not in accordance with what he would like to do. He has one fixed point, and that is he can't do what Hashem tells him not to do. So he asks, and the answer is no. He asks again. He keeps changing until the answer is yes. And once there's no looking back. Does he feel it's the right thing to do? He can't be bothered by questions like that. And what about the donkey and the angel? Aren't those signs? Bilam is trained to perceive the subtlest of signs. How does he miss this angel with a sword in his hand? And the donkey starts talking to him. Except the answer is none of these are a match for Bilam having already decided what he would like to do. There's no turning back. And that's really the lesson from Balaam. It's a personality type. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos contrasts Balaam with Avram. We perhaps would more intuitively contrast him with Moshe. They lived at the same time, their thesis and antithesis. But we have the famous three Talmidim of Balaam, and the three Talmidim, or more correctly, three characteristics that make one a Talmud of Avram, and three other characteristics that make one a Talmud of Balaam. Why is Avram the opposite number to Balaam? In what way? So Mepharshim explain that actually they are the exact opposites of each other. Avram lived in a time which was completely corrupt, and there was just chaos in the world. But because of his Ayin Tova and Ruach Nemucha and all of his midos, he was prepared to seek out the way that he should live. And he didn't stop until he found it. And even though it was contrary to the corruption around him, he paid no attention. He saw what needed to be seen, regardless of the fact that no one else was interested. Balaam is the opposite. Balaam refuses to see what is readily apparent. He lives in the generation of Kriyas Yamsuf, of Makos, of Ma'amad Har Sinai. He sees the Jewish people traveling through the wilderness on Nisim, and he ignores all of it. He is the opposite number to Avram. He is a lesson in denial. Case study. And he's not the last. That's why the Mishnah says, if a person has these corrupt midos, he will become a Talmud of Balaam, because that's his specialty. He'll also find ways to ignore everything that doesn't fit in with what he would like to do. And someone who has the right midos will find their way as a Talmud of Avram. This is the specialty of Balaam. On the one hand, there's a great deal of ridicule that attaches itself to Balaam, but he's not there for our entertainment. He's there to alert us to a certain way of relating to things. And it's possible for anyone to emulate that. The parasha of Balak is almost unique in that the Torah often has breaks. Parasha is what's called. Halachically, a parasha is a paragraph in the Torah, either psuchos or stumos. Either the next paragraph begins later on that line, or on a new line, it's psuchos and stumos. Almost every parasha has some type of break, except Balak has no breaks. It's just straight through. There's no... And the Balaam Musar explained, the breaks in the parsha represent pause for reflection. That's what the Medrash says. Hashem gave Moshe revach lisboning bo. In parsha la parsha lisboning bo, just to reflect, just to pause, just to stop. Look back, take stock, what's happened, to evaluate. In a sense, one could say, the symptom of Balaam is really depicted by just the run of the parsha. There's no stopping, there's no pausing, there's no taking stock, there's no reflection. And that really is what led Balaam ultimately to his downfall, and that is the major lesson of Parshas Balak. We have the way of Balaam, you have the way of Avram. They both have a Beis HaMedrash, and there's Talmidim that can go either way. That's really the lesson more than anything else. Aside from the Milo of Bnei Yisrael that Balaam was forced to admit, this is an enduring lesson for Bnei Yisrael, one well worth for us reflecting on. We'll leave it over there for this evening.